Carol Carman, and I'd like to welcome you to number 7 in an occasional series of podcasts from Grunty Fennery, home of all things Grunty Fen. For more information about the world of Grunty Fen, please visit our website, dennisofgruntyfen.co.uk, where you'll also find a link to our shop for recordings, books, maps and greeting cards. And speaking of recordings, we have two new collections for you. Archive Editions 10, called Slap, with two P's, and Archive Editions 11, Windy Huts. On Archive Editions 10, why is there a moose in the miscellaneous shed? What are lawn curry and electric soup? Why did Dennis have to take off two of his pullovers? Why is it best to move a brass bedstead fence at dusk? And why is there a standard lamp on the balcony? What troubles Dennis about a letter from Maudie? And how does he plan to make tourists part with their money? And what gives a lovely sheen to the pond water? Be warned, this collection from 1991 contains Knowles, Macmillan, and his moustache, a full chamber pot, curtain mussels, cherubs, mobile hedges, Queen Saloti of Tonga, fen eyes, dingle dangle things, a Stygian morass of miasmic effluvia, and a moose's nostrils. On Archive Editions 11, Dennis finds a key, but what does it fit? The fen is flooded, but why is Dennis unhappy that he's been forced to lead a life of luxury? Who's Ziggy? And why does he have an ambulance? Dennis wants to change his name, but what to? How many queues could there be at a bus stop? What can you tell about a man from his quiff? And why must Mr. South apologise to an angel? And how are the lady wrestlers involved? Again, be warned, this collection from 2003 contains White Hunter, saxophones, a cat trap thing, mauve fried bread, aubergine paint, camouflage, a sack of slack, trenching, mingling, a perm, canvas frocks, Puritan pugilists, mimicry, miracles, a strain on the drains and Cyril's trilby. Both of these collections are available from Dennis's online shop, dennisofgruntyfen.co.uk/shop. And you can have them as downloads or shiny CDs. In a few moments, we'll be hearing an episode of Dennis in which our hero talks to Mr. South about Easter traditions. But first, Mr. South himself waxes lyrical about some of his previous Easter visits to Grunty Fen.
Hello, my dear friends of the Fen. May I begin by thanking you for your continued and quite inexplicable interest in events at Grunty Fen. This is a lovely time of year at Grunty Fen. Well, at least it's memorable. I've been to Grunty Fen in the early spring and at Easter many times, and perhaps if I try to convey some sort of picture of Grunty Fen at this time of year, it might help you a little. It's a time of year when, the old Adam stirs in the young people, the young men of the village, the unmarried young men, as a sign of the stimulating, you know what I mean. They turn down the tops of their Wellington boots. This is a sign of readiness. And the young maids at that time, the maidens of the village, they decorate their buckets in a way which is totally traditional. They pick pretty poses for their buckets, using the local wild flowers which are in season now. Flowers like, I made a list of them here somewhere. Yes, here we are. Traditionally, their buckets contain pretty poses of writhing snake spittle, plague smear, dead damsels, and goat goiter. Now, these may sound unattractive names, but in fact, the buckets are really quite nice, really, when you see them all clanking down the village street to greet this season of renewal, growth and happiness. Perhaps this sense is best expressed by a newly discovered precious fragment of the work of Grunty Fen's only poet, or poetess, really, Agatha Gotobed, so little of her work has survived from the mid-20th century, and only recently, and this is the first time it's been performed in public, only recently it was found, this sheet of paper bearing one of her works, being used as a bookmark in the June 1951 edition of Fun in the Sun, a naturist magazine, which was hidden under the tea urn in the village hall. Anyway, no matter, these are her words in her, alas, all too limited oeuvre. I love the spring like anything. I greet its gusts of icy hail. Let daffs and such never fail, and our cheeks made by winter pale, look a lot more rosy as we pick our Easter posy. Isn't that nice? As I say, there are signs of among the young people of spring in the boots and the bucket department, but among the older people, it is also a significant season. For a start, it's time for the Easter bath. Many times, Dennis has told me of the organising that had to be done for the Easter bath in a household rather limited in bathing facilities, as the railway carriage where he lives with his grandmother was. It took the tin bath, which was dragged in from its hook on the privy at the end of the garden, and it was filled slowly with water. It had to be heated little by little on the range. And then there was a strict order for taking the bath. Granny, and I believe this may still be true, in many households, the elderly, in this case Granny, went first into the bath and had a good slop about. Then Dennis, he took his, and then finally, and this is no longer true, but it used to be true, the dog came third. Dennis spoke fondly of that dog. His name was Elson, named not after Nelson with the N drop, but after the chemical closet. People thought it's very odd that a dog should be named after a chemical closet, but apparently you had only to get within arm's length of it to know why. The dog is still memorialised in the garden. Elson is buried behind the railway carriage in a thicket of brambles, but the place is marked by a large lump of anthracite coal, which miraculously bears the imprint of a fossilised fern tens of millions of years old. This is also the time when Dennis and people like him at Grunty Fen, they change their underclothes. Well, not all their underclothes, it's the particularly the vest part, the thoracic coverings, as it were. Dennis once quite laboriously, I don't know that you really want to know this, but he once showed me why he wore three vests during the winter. And well, it was a clever bit of geometry. You see, all three of the vests had very substantial holes in the fabric. But there was a way of putting one vest over the other so that no hole ever coincided with the hole above or under. Are you listening? I'm doing my best to explain a very curious country custom. So that no naked skin was ever exposed to the elements, even though the coverings were somewhat lacy. What else can I tell you about this time of year at Grunty Fen, or is it best to simply to draw a veil over it? What I do suggest is that if you wish to take part in the celebrations at all, apart from listening to the recordings which Miss Edwards brought together, is to, since this is, after all, a faith festival, turn to that book of the Bible, which is found only at Grunty Fen. I'm talking of the book of Ezariah. And turn to chapter 3, verse 17. I'll try to read a little of it to you. Though not without help from those who would help not those who had not helped. Yet even now, when the spring bursts out, were we not to have had that which the good Lord gave us, we would be even as those who had not that which they had had before. I hope that helps you celebrate spring, and may I sincerely wish you a very happy Easter. Do try to get a good bath.
And if you'd like to know more about Dennis's Easter bath, you can find that episode on The Best of Dennis, Volume 1. Now, let's hear that episode from 1991, all about Easter traditions. Take it away, Dennis.
Finn Toigers got dewdrops on their nose. Finn Toigers got webs between their toes. Finn Toigers catch eel and grunt old boy. But blast that wind come off the fin, that'll blow you there and back again. Blast that wind come off the fin, that'll blow you off your bike.
Thank you, Dennis. Thanks very much indeed. May I begin by wishing you a very happy Easter. Tell me, do you have any traditional Easter customs here at Grunty Fen?
Nah, not no more. Oh. They all died out, you say?
It's a pity when these old folk customs die out. What were they before they died
out? Well, let me think. There was the cabbage rolling and...
Cabbage rolling?
Of course, there was one I used to love. That was a competitive chimney sweeping. Oh, that was marvellous. And then, of course, there was the religious football and all of that, you say.
What on earth was cabbage rolling?
Well, you know some parts of the country, they sort of roll things down hills Easter time and
that's
that.
Right, yes, it's an old fertility cult,
yeah,
I think.
Well, we used to roll cabbages, you say.
Cabbages. Elsewhere, it's usually eggs or hoops or cheeses or something like
well,
that.
Well, round here, we're always cabbages, you see. And always big, them big white round ones, you know.
Yes.
They were all sort of hard and resilient and that.
Yes,
and they were good ones, they were.
And then why did cabbage rolling die out at Grunty Fen?
Mischief. We think that should be obvious.
Oh, sorry, I just can't.
What have all them places got where they roll cheeses and hoops and eggs and all that, what we ain't got round here?
Well, I don't know. What is it you haven't got?
Hills, stupid.
Oh, hills,
we ain't got a proper knoll round here, have we?
No, you're quite right. There's no knolls here at all.
Very, very flat, missy.
Yes, indeed, this is indeed
now
very,
your
very flat.
Rolling ain't exactly what you might call one of the finest examples of country life, really.
No,
know.
Cabbage rolling must be very dull here, but there must be some sort of
unless,
slope.
Of course, you get one of them fin blows, and then your cabbage rolling's much better, you know.
Yes, yes.
Because that'll blow them along, you see, but then you've got to find yourself a drove what's going in the right direction,
yes,
if you know what I mean.
It's going to be going with the wind, as it were. But,
when there's no wind, you see, sometimes everyone stood around for hours and hours staring at the cabbages and nothing moving, and then they all sort of went home. And
Dennis, even at Grunty Fen, there must be a small incline somewhere.
Well, we used to get them going down that little bit incline, what go down into the pond.
Oh,
and
yes, that pond.
Then
yes.
People would stand on one side, sort of blowing and that, and trying to get the cabbages to sort of float across the pond on the other side. But the women used to complain, you see, because they wouldn't cook the cabbages after they'd been in the pond, because they say they weren't really what you might call very succulent after they've been in there, you know.
No, I know what they mean. Even the ducks don't like to eat the duckweed in that pond,
no.
Do they?
Well, anyway. That's all right on the road, you know, because, you see, there's a lot of science behind cabbage rolling, really, because you've got to get a nice, hard, savoy cabbage, you know, one of them nice, round, hard ones, you know. Because there's no good having one with a lot of loose leaves on it, nothing like that, because they flap, you know. And they go flop, 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 and slow them down,
oh, there's
you
nothing
see.
Nothing worse than a flappy cabbage.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm
one
sure,
old boy,
yeah.
His cabbages weren't much good that year, and he tried a cauliflower, but cauliflowers ain't so resilient, you know. They won't go.
I think you've disposed of the subject of cabbage rolling, Dennis. I think you also mentioned in your list of dead Easter customs at Grunty Fen competitive chimney sweeping. What was that? What was competitive Easter chimney sweeping?
Well, it was up council houses, you see, because
oh, really?
They've all got the oiled fire central heating now, and... Mm. So there ain't so much sweeping needed, really, but the men, they used to take great pride in the chimneys, you know. Mm. Oh, mischief, they used to draw beautiful.
Where did the competition come into it, though?
Well, see, they all used to sweep them together at Easter, you see.
Oh.
Yeah, great pride in being the first man to get his brush right up and sticking out the top of the house, you know.
Really?
Oh, yes, they were very highly organised up them councils.
How did it work, this competitive chimney sweeping?
Ah, well, that was well organised, myself. Each man used to stand at his own front gate with his brushes under one arm and his rods under the other. And then they'd say, on your marks, and they'd crouch down in that sort of starting position. And then they'd say, go. And they went charging up the front paths and into those parlours, and they started shoving rods up the chimney, myself. Oh, that was exciting. And the judges, they all used to stand out in the road looking up. And all the kids, they all stood there with great expectancy on their little faces, looking up there towards the sky and amongst the clouds. And then there was the first one what come up out of his stack, you know, myself. He were the winner. Oh, that was marvellous.
That sounds a charming, innocent, old-fashioned way of competing with one another at Easter.
That weren't very innocent, though, myself.
Oh, it sounds quite innocent to
me. There was a lot of cheating, you see.
Oh, really? How can you cheat when you're sweeping a chimney?
Well, myself, some of them used to have accomplices up in the bedroom, by the bedroom fireplace, you know. And as soon as they say goo, they'd start shoving up his rods from the bedroom, you see.
And they were already halfway up the chimney?
Oh, yeah, they have halfway start. But you see, they used to come out so fast, a lot of people used to get suspicious. I remember old Josh Amy's brush that was out the top one year for the rest of competitors. They've even got the straps off his rods.
So, I mean, how was this cheating prevented?
Well, they got round it. Yeah, they had marshals on the landings, you see.
Why, is he inspecting the bedroom fireplaces to make sure there was no hanky-panky in the hearth?
Of course, another way to cheat was to have a duplicate set of rods already stuck up your chimney before the competition began, you see. Then all you had to do was screw one last section on them. Bob's your uncle, myself.
Oh, I see. Yeah, some people would cheat at anything, wouldn't they?
Yeah, so they had to have marshals in the parlour and all. Once they got rid of the cheating, they started to develop what you might call new techniques now.
What sort of technique?
Well, one old boy, he got the idea of putting his rods together in the backyard.
What, screwing them all in a great long line in the backyard?
Yeah, and then when he heard the starter say goo, he'd take a run at the grate, you see. This old boy, he got his rods sort of jammed in the damper on his grate, and that catapulted him back down the other side of the scullery, and that took all his companion set with it.
And the
toast and fork.
Oh, dear,
His auntie was ever so upset because she gave him that fork, and that got so bent that were useless, you know.
Oh, dear, so what, shall we
had to make toast round the corner then, you know, and you couldn't see when that were done because that was sort of out of sight, you know.
No,
and
he
used to
have
tea cakes sometimes and the sticky side used to get overdone and that.
Yes,
and
I think Dennis, thank you. Thank you very much, indeed. But I think I've heard enough about a bent toasting fork.
Of course, when the oil-fired came in, myself, that was like the end of era, really.
Tragic.
Them chimneys, they didn't need sweeping no more, you see. And of course, some of them old boys, you know, they used to spend hours and hours getting this competition rods all ready. They used to linseed oil them canes of a night, you know, rub them all down with extra fine sandpaper and that. One old boy, he saved up for months and months, bought himself some beautiful carbon fibre rods.
Carbon fibre?
Oh, yes, myself, they were beautiful. Bright blue,
They took it very seriously, didn't they?
Yeah, that was a great shame, because there was a lot resting on it, you see, because there was all the side bets and that.
You had gambling on the chimney sweeping.
Oh, yeah, one of the best cyclists in Granty Fen used to get all the bets slips, you know, and he used to go herring down to Newmarket on his back to place all the best and that.
So there was a whole culture devoted to chimney sweeping that just died.
They tried to keep it going because,
they've
got all this beautiful equipment, you see.
So what did they do?
Well, they said to themselves, if we can't go up, we'll go down.
Down?
Yeah. So what they done, myself, they took those manhole covers off, and all the men used to stand by those manholes in the front gardens, and then they start ramming those rods down them holes, you see, when the judge said goo, missus. And the marshals used to stand by the manholes out in the road and wait for the rods to emerge, you see. Heavens. First one in sight, an inspection cover, and the judge would wave his red flag.
Dennis, forgive me, but this competitive drain cleaning, it all sounds rather unsavoury.
Very savoury, I tell you.
Right.
You and then hit the nylon head there. Ooh, that lacked the allure, the chimney sweep, you see. That never attracted the crowds, you know. People used to like standing outside the council houses of Easter Monday waiting for them brushes to pop out the chimneys, staring down the manhole that weren't so alluring. And, I've never known.
Indeed, yes.
Oh, yes, people indeed used to have their hankies over their noses, you know, and they didn't like it as much.
It's a pity there's no more competitive chimney sweeping.
Of course, you have to admit, as a sport, that were a bit what you might call limited.
Well, the chimney
sweeping. Yeah, because if you were champion, you see, you couldn't go on to greater things and that. There were no leagues or international matches or nothing like that. I mean, you could never become what they might call Olympic champion at it or nothing like that.
No.
You never had the same allure as the javelin, as the discus. So I'll tell you what we did think one year. We thought maybe we could go up them brickworks outside Peterborough way, you know, because that'd take 3 or 4 sets of rods to get right up one of them, Miss South. Oh, yeah, you could just hear the commentary, couldn't you? Like it were on the, when they had the boat race and that, they say, in, out, in, out. And you could imagine them telling you about the rods.
Dennis.
His rods on. Rod
Dennis.
3. Rod 4. And the other man up the other chimney, he going a bit faster. He got a slightly faster stroke, you know, that rod 5. Rod 6.
I
rod
think
rod
you're
7,
letting
you know,
your imagination run away with
at
you,
the
Dennis.
Top there, and then you get a lot of soot out one of them chimneys. Yeah,
absolutely,
all,
yes. Dennis, that's disposed of cabbage rolling and chimney sweeping as old Easter customs, but you also mentioned religious football.
Well, see, we used to have more religion in Granty Fen, you know, in the old days and that. Because there was all sorts of religions, you know, and everyone had a football team, you see. I used to remember Easter match between the primitives and the igniters, you know.
The primitives and the igniters?
Yeah, every Easter Monday the primitives played igniters. That's what we called them for short.
Really?
Primitives, full name, I think I've told you before, that was the Strict Sabbatarian Fundamentalist Zion Baptist Brothel of the Evangelical Assemblies of Jehovah's Brethren.
I think that's not Brothel, it's Bethel.
Primitive.
Yes, it's quite a mouthful, isn't it?
That's why we call them primitives for short. Well, you couldn't stand by the touchline shouting, come on, Strict Sabbatarian Fundamentalist Zion Baptist Brothel of the Evangelical Assemblies of Jehovah's Brethren, now could you?
It's Bethel.
No more than what you could shout out for the igniters. Come on, the phosphorescent basilica of the sanctified ignition of the universal illumination, could you? Because they had a score before you got it all out and that.
Yes,
so we used to call them igniters for short.
Yeah, I see. What was the difference between the primitives and the igniters?
Well, see, the igniters, they was very strong on candles, you know.
Yeah, really?
And their little chapel, they were only on this and heart, and they weren't much look at from outside, but inside, myself, that was a blaze of light. Hundreds and thousands of candles, blast me, that were hot and they wet. Myself, that shimmered. That little old chapel, Miss Heath, you could see that from miles away across the fen. That was like a mirage sort of shimmering there over in the distance. That was so hot you could make toast on that roof, you
well, that's
know.
Handy. It's very nice to have a religion that enables you to make toast on the roof.
Yeah, because they sort of worship the flame, you know.
Are they fire worshippers at Grunty Fen?
Well, Sammy Wong, well, he was the keeper of the flame, you
keeper
know.
Keeper of the flame?
Yeah, he kept that from time immoral, you know.
Immemorial.
Well, that come from the marsh gas, you see.
Oh, that's ignis fatuus.
You what?
That's the Latin for marsh gas or will o' the wisp.
Yeah, well, they got it from out on the fen, you know. And
yes.
He used to keep it, you see. He was.
And where did he keep the flame?
In his ascot. That was the pilot light, you see, in his geyser up over his sink and that. And he used to live up Chatteris, you see. And trouble was, he cycled with the flame in the jar every time they were going to hold a service.
He cycled
that.
From Chatteris with a sort of flame in a jam jar?
Yeah, trouble was, that kept blowing out and he had to keep going back to his ascot to get another one, you see. Sometimes in windy weather, that took him a couple of days before they could have a service and that. And that was very, very late some weeks, you know.
I quite believe you.
Yeah, they used to have bonfires for those festivals and for those marriages.
Really?
Oh, they loved a nice fire.
They really were fire worshippers,
yeah,
weren't they?
And they always had this harvest festival in the winter.
Why
yeah
on earth did they have their harvest festival in the winter?
Well, they used to have it about February. They always wait till there's a lot of snow on the ground and they'd have this harvest festival.
What did they have in their harvest festival?
That was very unusual. They'd have cans of paraffin and sacks of anthracite and flasks of lamp oil and that and buckets of coke, all sort of arranged artistically around the basilica, you see.
Really, arranged around the basilica? It's hard to imagine a can of paraffin and a bucket of coke being arranged artistically, Dennis.
Yeah, well, They
were a weird lot, weren't they? I mean, what was it like to be a member of this Igniter's religion? What did you call them? What was their full name again?
That was the Phosphorescent Basilica of the Sanctified Ignition of the Universal Illumination.
Well, I mean, what was it like to be a member of this
weird
religion?
Well, I used to encourage these kids from very early age, you know, to play with matches. About 4 year old, I used to give them a box of matches
they
each.
Actually encourage the children to play with matches?
The trouble was, all igniters, they had these great big sort of scorch marks on the clothes.
I am not surprised.
And they'd always have a lot of that sort of candle grease, you know, stuck to their clothes. They used to encourage smoking in church, too,
oh,
you know.
Oh, come, Dennis, they
Oh, yeah, all the women used to have fags on, you know, while they were singing the hymns and that. There's a lot of coughing in between the sort of verses and that, you know. All the men used to have just pipes going, Miss Southcourt. They used to have a couple of chimneys, one each end of that little basilica,
you
smell marvellous, you know. You could smell that basilica when they were going full throttle miles and miles away down there. And, of course, all the deacons of the church, they used to have them big cigars and that. They used to get them from the Americans up American bases and that. King Edwards, they used to love them, Miss Southcourt. Oh, yeah, you know what their favourite snacks
what?
Was? Charcoal biscuits, Mrs.
Oh, Dennis.
Yeah.
Yes, all right then. Well, that's the Igniters who played in this Easter football match at Grunty Fen. But what about the other team you mentioned? What was it, the Primitives? What was primitive about the Primitives?
Well, they wouldn't let those members listen to the wireless and nothing either.
Oh, I say, that is primitive. Yeah.
Not even Henry Hall.
Crumbs, yes.
Yeah, they didn't believe in comfort and nothing like that, you know. They liked everything very, very plain, Miss Uthie. I even played very plain football, really, you know.
Plain football?
Yeah, no curve balls, no dribbling and nothing like that. They never even kicked the ball very high, really, you know. They used to keep it on the green.
Yes, it's very plain football, yes. And I imagine the Igniters, on the other hand, played a completely different style of football.
Oh, yes. Very fancy football, what they play.
Fancy football.
Oh, yeah, Miss Heath. You used to kick those little legs up and that, you know, and do a little sort of pirouette. No, that was more like square dancing, really,
yeah,
you know.
Yes. Were there any special rules for this Easter Monday football match?
Well, they're more or less the same as ordinary football, except that they never have penalties. And
what
do like
they
that.
Have instead of
they
penalties?
They used to have penances.
Penances? Oh, I see. Oh, it was a religious match, yes.
Well, yeah, you see, and of course, some of them footballers, they was foul-mouthed, Miss Heath.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. You know, and I used to get excited. You see, if you work out on the fen all the week, you can say all sorts of swear words, nobody hear you. But when you're playing football, you see the spectators, they go red in the face.
Yes,
and little kids, they had to cover their ears up and that. And some
Absolutely.
Of them were very foul-mouthed, yes. Miss Heath, you see. And they used to get sent off by the referee. Sometimes, you know, they were so foul-mouthed, they'd only be about one fella sort of wandering about in the middle of the field all on his own, just sort of dribbling the football about.
And
you know,
everybody else was doing penances.
Yeah,
what were these penances then?
Well, I'd to do jobs around the pitch.
What do you mean jobs around the pitch?
Well, like clipping the hedge or do a little bit of sort of grass cutting or sort of pick up sticks or something.
Do you mean to tell
me
that during a football match there were more players cutting hedges and trimming the grass than there were actually playing on the pitch?
Oh, yeah, they used to save the jobs up for the Easter matches, you know, like sort of rehanging the door and that sort of thing.
Yes, it really does sound a most extraordinary Easter Monday football match, Dennis. But look, what made it die out? We've heard how the Easter Monday cabbage rolling died out and how the Easter Monday competitive chimney sweeping died out, but what killed off the Easter Monday religious football?
That was a fight.
Fight?
Yeah. I see that way. Easter Monday 1947.
And the players actually fought one another?
No, that weren't the players, Miss Heath.
Well, who was it then?
That was the supporters.
Good heavens.
See, they was nearly all women. See, they were all these little old ladies what was dead keen on religion and that. You know, they always used to suck up to the vicars, you see. And they see the Igniters gang of old ladies.
Yes.
See, they knelt behind the goal mouth.
Yes.
And the Primitives, they knelt behind the other, you see.
Well, why did they kneel?
Well, they knelt there and they prayed for the other side to lose.
Good heavens.
That's what made them so slow to change ends half time, you see.
What made them slow to change ends?
Well, their knees got stiff on the grass, you see, and little old ladies, you know, they get the screws in their knees. That were a sorry sight to see, all them old women hobbling down the sideline, going down the other end, you know.
Indeed, very sorry sight. But what made them actually fall to fighting one another? You'd expect the foul-mouthed footballers to fight, but not these little religious old ladies.
Well, you see, that was the Igniter's little old women turned to make the half-time tea, you see.
Yes.
And they knew that the Primitives hated anything sweet. But, Miss Sif, do you know what they done?
What did they do?
Them little old ladies. They sugared the whole urn just to roil them, you know.
So what a dirty trick.
Oh, that were a terrible fight, missus. That were a terrible fight. They drew blood, them little old ladies. They went to each other with their handbags and their umbrellas and that, and they knocked us hats off, missus. Oh, that were a mess, that were.
All over a cup
of
tea.
Oh, yeah, they had to abandon the match, and they never played again because they reckoned them old ladies was too dangerous.
Good heavens above.
Because they weren't long after the fight, the igniters lost his basilica anyhow, you know.
The igniters lost their basilica?
Yeah, missus. That burnt down.
Well, I can't say I'm surprised, although I have been surprised by some of the things you told me today. Dennis, thank you very much indeed for telling me the history of Easter customs at Grunty Fen. Would you mind singing your goodbye song now, please?
That's all in your life, that's all in your life. Don't go scratching of your poor old head. Don't go worrying, just go back to bed. That's all in your life and you're a long time dead. That's all in your life. God bless.
Dennis, have you been pulling my leg about all this?
Yeah, would I do a thing like that?
I don't know. I don't know.
Thank you for listening to this Grunty Fen podcast. Please spread the word so that more people can enjoy the bleak but wonderful world of Dennis of Grunty Fen and Mr. South. And don't forget about those two new collections of episodes now available in the shop. Thank you so much for supporting us, and we'll bring you more podcasts later in the year. On behalf of everyone at dennisofgruntyfen.co.uk, may we wish you all the very best this Easter, and happy listening. That's all in your life. Mind how you go.